Fake handoff. He'll throw it on second down. Deep down the middle. Wide open man. Akeem Butler. Over the shoulder catch. It's going to be a Cyclone touchdown.
Has a little moxie about him, doesn't it?
He absolutely does. You saw how fired up his sideline was. And they're going to be elated for this. Purdy to the end zone.
Because, yeah, good's good. But what's elite in the elite moment? Don't tell me what you've done. Go back into the critical moments and tell me what you should have done when you had the opportunity to do it. That's what elite is. That's what warriors do. That's what champions do.
Welcome to the Whitecast.
Welcome, listeners, back to another brand new episode of the Wide Right Natty Whitecast. It is another victorious edition of the podcast, which is quite enjoyable. We are sponsored by Estos Bar and Grill. I am Austin Keeney, and I am joined by Matt Nelson and Dylan Kuhn. We got the band back together this week. I am really excited to talk to you guys about Iowa State's 30-7 victory over the money laundering scheme disguised as university. And I'm talking about the University of Texas. Down there, SEC's finest. Gentlemen, before we get into football, though, I wanted to start with this. How was your experience on Saturday, Matt? I know you really enjoyed it. And then I want to talk to you about the worst beverage that has ever been created.
I absolutely had, I think, probably the most like elite day of college football watching. I'll put something about it on Twitter later this week, Keeney and Dylan. It's great to be here with you, but had a tailgate at the Nelson house, tailgated with some neighbors, tailgated with the in-laws. Great tailgate food. Obviously, awesome weather, great atmosphere in the tailgate lots. And then just an absolutely raucous, rowdy, fun in-game atmosphere. I would say just a top, easily top three football environment for me in Jack Trice Stadium, and probably all time the best football Saturday that I've spent in recent memory.
I absolutely love it, and I think I would second that. Just a glorious day, perfect weather, delightful football game. We'll get into it. Dylan, I know that you thoroughly enjoyed the result on Saturday. I didn't get a chance to talk to you much over the weekend, though. So what was your mindset going through the game?
Well, I spent my Saturday. I did have a ticket to the game, but had a late night at work Friday night and an early morning on Saturday. Didn't really feel like, you know, booking it to Ames. So I went to Pella, watched it with two of my best college friends. Had a blast. First half a little stressful, and then we just opened up in the second half. So I had a whole lot of fun Saturday watching that game, as well as a lot of other college football games. And I watched pretty much the full slate of NFL, which is a rare feat for Dylan Kuhn, yesterday on Sunday. So a whole lot of football this weekend.
And it sounds like you're making up for it by watching the NBA tonight. I was wondering, yeah, if you spent a little bit of time in my hometown of Carlisle. Certainly a lot going on around there.
I spent, not this weekend, but the weekend before, a little train wreck, and I can say this because nobody got hurt, nobody got injured, but that train couldn't have been wrecked in a better place for a camera, because it was kind of right on the highway there. The lighting of the sun was perfect. So shout out to that train crash. That was B-roll heaven for a photographer. I appreciate the train crash in Carlisle, Keeney.
Guys, I haven't seen a train crash that bad since the Texas Longhorns.
It was crazy.
Games.
Oh, that was, what a segue.
That was smooth, ooh, right?
That was beautiful. Elite.
The worst beverage I'm alluding to, though, is a little thing called Four Loko Hard Seltzer, which I somehow came across at the tailgate, at the house where I was starting my Saturday before going to the tailgating lots. I got to be honest. I don't know where you buy this. I don't know who brought it. I know that I brought one to the Wide Right tailgate for people to try, and Levi posted about it on the Twitter account, described as the worst shit ever created. And I must say, I do agree with him. It was that bad. It was 12% hard seltzer with a hint of sour mango, if that sounds appealing to you.
Good.
No, that sounds absolutely disgusting.
Sour mango is what they went with. That should have been the last alcohol company to, and they might have been the last alcohol company to make a hard seltzer, but they probably should have just kept that one in the brainstorming board meeting. I don't think that was supposed to come out.
I mean, I'll be honest. I saw that and I was like, yeah, this society isn't going to last that much longer, right?
Oh, that's yuck.
No, the end is nigh. Yeah, can you, but should you situation.
Yeah.
Not enough research done there by whoever the hell makes Four Loko.
That's a little Jurassic Park style right there. Just because we can doesn't mean that we should. And with that said, speaking of things that can be done but probably should not be done, the Texas Longhorns going to the SEC. I've got all the zingers in me tonight. let's go football game, Iowa State, like I said, 130-7. And I want to start with this question, guys. This was the most satisfying win for Iowa State since fill in the blank.
This is a fairly recent one. The Kansas State 45-0 shit can game. Just very satisfying. It wasn't like Kansas State was that good, but we've been jibbed so many times with Kansas State. It felt that was a very satisfying game last year. This one was as well, though.
Yeah, I would say Oklahoma State this year for me was probably just as satisfying. Gundy had absolutely owned Matt Campbell and the Cyclones. So while this one was great, it was great to send Texas packing off to the SEC to send them on a flight back home. Feeling the way that they did was truly fantastic, but I think still finally getting one up on Mike Gundy with Oklahoma State playing the way that they are, that win looks more and more impressive every day. So that's maybe a cop out, but I still think that Oklahoma State win this year proves to be a great victory.
See, Matt, and I understand where you're coming from. That was like on the edge of my seat. I thought I was going to have a heart attack in the fourth quarter of that game.
Yes.
And for me, a purely satisfying victory like this, I had the Fiesta Bowl in mind because that was never truly in doubt either. But Dylan, the Kansas State 45-0, that's a really good offering as well. I don't think you go wrong with either of those. I think personally, I would probably say the Fiesta Bowl just because it was more recent than that Kansas State game. But I mean, I want to give a shout out to Matt Campbell and the Iowa State Cyclones because I talked a lot of trash both on the internet and to the Texas fans that I saw at the game. So I very much appreciate them backing that up with a dominant effort on the field. What was your guys' favorite derisive chant that we directed at them?
I was not at the game, but I'm going to go. I heard we were chanting SEC as we were in victory formation, and that's pretty elite. It just means more for Texas, you know?
That one was great. The SEC / booing as they were trying to trying to sing the fight song to their own band. And also the student section sticking around to escort the team after the game off the field with a chorus of chants and boos was wonderful. You rarely see that from a student body, especially after a big win. They've got things to do. They've got four local seltzers to drink. So for them to stick around and put in that extra effort was I'm sure much appreciated by the Longhorns.
Was your use of the word escort intentional?
Heyo.
Heyo. We didn't really talk about this last week because the story was just kind of unfolding as we were recording the episode. So we needed more details to come out. Some real monkey business down there in Austin, right?
Yeah, that story really assassinated the talk shows throughout the week. What a development in Austin.
Development is right. What a funny story that was. What a funny story it is. I mean, it reads, does it not, like a Mad Lib that the Onion would put together? It's it's the jokes obviously write themselves, but when you really strip it all down, it's things like this that make college football so fun. We all get caught up in what's going on with the rankings and the polls and who's climbing and who's descending the polls. But in reality, it's these very funny stories like this. When a team does something stupid and just has to wear it and can't take it off easily, that's what makes this sport fun.
I'm so glad we waited on this too, because Matt, I don't think we could have done it justice without you here.
I mean, you knew that I was going to be ready to give some bananas takes on this subject, and I'm not monkeying around.
All right, I want to make fun of Texas a little bit more because it will never get old. The constant stream of horns down every time you got a shot of the crowd was fantastic. Obviously, the SEC chants were delightful. Very glad that we were.
How about the people with the monkey puppets or the stuffed monkeys? I mean, what was going on there? I loved it.
Yeah, absolutely. No, getting SEC chants on the actual broadcast was great. I was trying to get a lot of those started up. I was sitting way too far up to like really get a chant started, but I was yelling SEC a lot throughout the game, I must say. Do you know Texas is 4-5 right now?
On a 4-game losing streak or 3-game losing streak? Is it 3 or 4?
4-game.
Four game. Oh, no. Cool.
Will Texas win another football game this season? They're playing this weekend.
That might be a Texas worst nightmare. Kansas is known to beat Texas. People forget about that. People forget that Kansas beat Texas. In football.
People forget.
I will push back. People do not forget.
Yeah, we let them know. You can't lose to Kansas and just have people forget about that. It's like USD Coyotes and the Texas Longhorns are the only two teams that have ever lost to Kansas since like 2008, I think. Don't fact check me on that, but I'm pretty sure that stands.
Yeah, but that's actually going to be an interesting game. Texas is not playing with much bite right now.
I love how you're still doing this, too. that's 3 in a row for the series for the Cyclones, too, including that pretty eventful game in Austin last year. And this was like just an absolute ass kicking, which was awesome. I want to talk a little bit more specifics about the game. So at what point did you guys, like, when was it clear to you that it was going to be a blowout in Iowa State's favor?
I want to say, and I forget who tweeted this, but I just saw it today. There is a striking resemblance to the Breece Hall. I think it was his first touchdown. It was kind of a halfback toss. Reggie Bush had almost the exact same. It was the exact same play and almost the exact same route to the end zone. They both kind of cut it back. And that was early. I think that was to get us to 10-7. And I'm not sure if I knew then that it was going to be a blowout, but that was the offense struggled so much. And to see Breece Hall just break that one kind of real early in the second half, definitely a good feeling. So I will say that was kind of exactly what we needed in that. And Breece Hall gave it to us, and then he would just continue to have a great night. So I'll say that. I'm not sure if it's my true answer, but it was a very impressive run by Breece.
Yeah, I would say, you know, after that first, I mean, it did end up being correct, but after that bizarre play to open the game with the fumble that Aishim took back to, you know, 5-yard line or whatever it was, I thought that was going to be it right there. I was like, man, if we're already doing this, if they're going to turn the ball over here, obviously it did not work out. It did not work out that way. But I kind of felt that from the get-go, and it just kind of took a while longer than I expected to actually get there.
Yeah, I think what I got to go with is the double pass. So shout out Xavier Hutchinson. What a beautiful throw to Tariq Milton. Just absolutely had them stunned. And that made it a 2-score game. And at that point, you're like, okay, Texas has already benched their quarterback. They're not scoring again. Bijan is not going to break off a long run on this defense. This thing's a wash.
Also, I want anytime an Iowa State has a wide receiver pass to another wide receiver, we should call it the Brass Monkey. You guys were both at the game. But the commercial break before that, FS1 sent it off with a little Brass Monkey by Beastie Boys. And I think it was the first play back from commercial. We drew that up. So that forever will be called the Brass Monkey for myself.
I love that. Dylan, that's actually a great segue into something else that I wanted to talk about. And you probably would have missed this, but just all of the sounds, the events between the marching band, what, you know, Fox Sports playing Brass Monkey, which, by the way, leaked troll job by them. That is well done. The band played Wanna Be Like You from the Jungle Book at one point.
Oh, nice.
Which is a very subtle and nice jab. You had the marching band with the Pikachu things, which was a fun avenue for their performance. The in-stadium DJ, aside from Swag Surf getting cut short by a timeout that was not a TV break, which, by the way, the one thing I was truly disappointed in this game was not getting to see the full Swag Surf. But I believe the in-stadium DJ not only played Ric Flair Drip, but he also played Pipe It Up. Just playing bangers in the stadium and made for a very fun setting to watch a game in. I mean, Dylan, he played Pipe It Up, like 20 seconds of it.
If you're going for Ric Flair Drip in Ames, Iowa, that is a very bold choice, but one I can get behind. I think maybe 20% of the stadium knows that song, but the gumption it takes, that's something I can tip my hat to, Matt.
Oh, he was in his bag, Dylan. You would have appreciated it.
Hell yeah, man.
No, it was perfect setting too for a night game in Jack Trice Stadium. How about the uniform fake out too? We thought they were going all Cardinal, and then we show up in the All Blacks.
All Blacks, and they pulled fireworks out of nowhere on us.
Yeah, I didn't see that coming at all. We were walking out of the stadium and fireworks are going off. Like, what in the world?
Jack Trice was wilding on Saturday night. The one thing I do want to talk about, a negative before we get, I guess the one negative before we get into some of the analysis of the game, it's probably good to break down what we saw on offense and maybe some of the, you know, the reasons the game turned around in the second half on defense. But as an Iowa State fan, I just have to say this. I cannot be the only person who, after that, you know, 14 play, 5 minute Texas drive where they very methodically marched down the field, thought, uh-oh, this is exactly what Jarrett Nagy did to us. We're going to let Hudson Card absolutely crockpot us. It's happening. Thankfully that was not the case.
Yeah, I didn't even feel nervous about that, to be perfectly honest. It did take us a while to get going. So I guess, if we're getting into specifics about the game itself, it did take a while for Iowa State to get going. Obviously they were down 7-3 at halftime. You know, it was a weird thing too, because like, we were playing really well. The defense was playing well. We didn't really execute the way that we should have early in the game. Right. And I feel like the first half of the game just absolutely flew by. Like, out of nowhere, it's already halftime, and oh crap, we're losing because Texas went on a drive in the second quarter.
It was Go ahead, Matt.
No, you're spot on there, Keen. That first half was, there were so many just punts and short possessions. It was a very odd, very, very odd first half.
Yeah, it was a little Big Ten-y in the first half. A little Big Ten West.
Little Iowa Northwestern.
Yeah, had a little bit of that feel. And then it looks like we made all of the right adjustments at halftime, and Texas made no adjustments at halftime. Bold strategy there, Cotton. But yeah, really a tale of two halves, the game as a whole and for Iowa State, obviously.
Yeah, they used to play defense like that in the SEC. They don't do that anymore. That's an offensive league through and through. The quarterback change, I didn't even realize that was just, hey, we got to bench this guy to see if we can jumpstart our offense at all. I thought Casey Thompson might have been hurt, and that's why they put Hudson Card out there. I watched that guy play against Arkansas. I knew he had absolutely no chance against our defense of doing anything. The battle of the running backs. Let's talk about that for a minute. Bijan Robinson, I think, had like 80-something yards and two fumbles, I believe. Breece Hall, 136 yards and two touchdowns on the ground. Any doubt as to who the best running back in the Big 12 is?
One of my favorite stats from this game, Bijan Robinson's longest run was 14 yards, and he ended it with a fumble. So, not great, Bob. Breece Hall has done this. The only other competition for best running back is Abner with Baylor, and on their head-to-head game too, Breece Hall had almost 200 rushing yards in that game and multiple touchdowns. I think two or three. I can't remember exactly, but. If Breece Hall is going up against a running back that people are like, oh, this is the best running back in the Big 12, and it's not Breece Hall. Breece Hall destroys that man and his will to live. He really plays top form, it seems like, against teams with other really good running backs, just to be like, no, it's me. It's really me. It's not you. It's me.
Yeah, Breece Hall kind of snatched Deuce Vaughn's soul. He's had a really bad season, statistically speaking. So
that's another good one.
I love that Breece gets up for those kinds of games too. And that, you know, there's a lot of chatter about, hey, maybe Bijan Robinson should be, maybe he's a sleeper guy who could win the Heisman. And then Texas this season has gone completely off the rails. Well, Breece Hall, he's not, you know, he finished sixth in the Heisman last year. He's not going to get anywhere close to that this year, but it's just been an absolute joy to watch him run the football. And I'm getting really sad thinking about, I mean, not just Breece, but all these guys that have been so productive for so long. We've gotten to know and love them for 3 or 4 years, or some even 5 years as Iowa State football players, and their time is running out. You know, it's the second to last home game we have.
Yeah, this was a discussion in the Slack today on how many current players are the best at their position in Iowa State history. And it's probably 3 or 4 on this team, and a couple are debatable, you know. Brock Purdy, Seneca Wallace, Troy Davis, Breece Hall. We can kind of make an argument for either, but I think Charlie Kohler for sure. I don't think we've had a better pass rusher than Will McDonald. It's just crazy how many, you know, guys we're going to remember on this team as being so good at their position and so good as a team. You're exactly right, Kenny. This team has been years in the making. It's been so fun to watch these guys come in as redshirt freshmen, you know, 3 or 4 years ago. With kind of the guys that built the foundation, and now these guys are really excelling on the foundation that, you know, guys like Lazard and Lanning had built 2016 and 2017. So it's been really cool to see these guys grow.
Yeah. You guys want to go?
That question, Dylan, about how many of these guys are the best at their position is fascinating to me, because it's numerous players on both sides of the football. So at the same time, I'm actually excited. You know, obviously, Iowa State still has a chance to do special things this season, possibly even get to Dallas yet if things, you know, of course, shake the right way. But I think I'm excited to watch what these guys can do the rest of the season. And then, you know, we've seen enough of the young players behind them. I think, you know, as Matt Campbell talks about building a program, you know, from the ground up and being here for the long haul, that's next year becomes really exciting to see what this program does and what they're left with.
Yeah, I want to talk to you about, we'll do some, I think it's a good time for some bigger picture stuff at this point in the season, but I want to talk about the defense specifically, because, you know, as you speak of the best to ever do it, we actually did have a record broken on Saturday. Will McDonald, career sack leader at Iowa State.
Yeah, it kind of happened under the radar, but really just an amazing accomplishment to get it. What's amazing to me, Keeney, is it was set by Jaquan Bailey, you know, a Matt Campbell guy, and then broken promptly by another Matt Campbell guy. So I think we'll see a lot of records like that start to be taken down. And Will was a menace again, got held a few other times, and it was not called. If you could add sacks to that, you know, or convert a quarter of his holds to his total, he would have an unbelievable amount of sacks.
I've kind of thought about this, like, when you keep stats in football, there should be some way to measure how many holding calls you generate. Like, I don't know if that should count as a half of a sack, or, you know, just somehow somebody needs to be counting that, because if, you know, you add that to Will McDonald's sack total, he's got to be far and away the number one in the nation at just pass rushing excellence.
Will McDonald leading the country in holds forced by the offensive line. Also, I saw a stat, and they said it during the broadcast too, that he pressured 7 of, I think, 20 dropbacks. So he pressured 33% of all passing plays that he was out there for.
Yeah,
so there's a 33% chance Will McDonald's going to be at the quarterback by the time he throws it. That is terrifying.
My my advanced analytics that I'm running here tells me that's pretty good.
Yeah, not bad.
Matt, can we get the special teams report? Andrew Mephis, Big 12 Special Teams Player of the Week.
Oh, man. I was watching from the end zone on that 51, 52-yard field goal. That ball was like above the uprights until it went over the crossbar. That, you know, everyone else said, oh, this would have been good from blank. That thing was right down the middle, and he absolutely tanked that ball.
Yeah, he might be like a pro kicker at this point.
I really think that he might. Just the confidence that he kicks with, making 11 in a row, being, you know, obviously he's been a Big 12. He's been on several times by the Big 12, but if you can make 50 yarders look easy in college, right, you almost always have a shot at the NFL. That is very hard to do. He's well-rounded. He can punt. He seems to me like a guy who is absolutely going to be signed by an NFL team, no doubt.
All right, you want to know how I could tell that it was a great night for special teams? Because I have almost nothing to ask you about when it comes to special teams.
Yeah,
couple bad punts in the first half, but all's good. You know, special teams. Got to give a little love to our guy Kenny Wang, Kene Nwangu, with both the return touchdown and a first down on a fake punt.
We definitely do.
Special teams, you? People are asking.
That's the word on the street.
We talk the most about our special teams of any university out there. I think that's true. For reasons good and bad.
It's us. Special teams fans.
Not even a lot of punting in the second half. And they had Bijan returning kickoffs. And there was just basically nothing that he could do as a kick returner either. So, yeah, that was just fantastic. Great night for special teams because there's not a lot that really needed to be said about it. Okay, big picture stuff. Iowa State, where they're playing right now. Obviously, we had that, you know, debacle in Morgantown, but here's how the schedule sets up. At Texas Tech, at Oklahoma, 11 o'clock, big noon kickoff. Can't wait. And then home against TCU on Black Friday. Do you think this team is playing well enough right now to win those three games and get to Dallas?
Keeney, I really want to say yes. And the reason I am leaning towards yes, I really don't know if Oklahoma knows what they have at quarterback yet.
Caleb Williams. Hey, he's going to win the Heisman.
Caleb Williams.
Learn his name.
Yeah, allegedly. Allegedly. He's playing great against Texas, who has a great defense, as we've all seen them go 0-4. But yeah, he has not looked like a Heisman Oklahoma caliber quarterback in his starts. I don't think Oklahoma's untouchable like they have been in some years. I think they're undefeated. And they're obviously, you know, still the top of the Big 12 conference. Tough game against Baylor this week too. So I think we'll really learn a lot about Oklahoma this week. As far as Texas Tech, they got a new coach today as we're recording on Monday. And they don't even have does a coaching change affect the line of a game? Because I went on FanDuel today and the only thing I could bet on for Iowa State Texas Tech was money line. So I don't know what's going on there. Vegas doesn't even know what to think about this Saturday for the Cyclones, apparently. But I think Texas Tech is probably the easiest game we have left. Oklahoma is going to be the hardest. And then we just need to handle business. It'll be a very emotional senior night. On Black Friday. So I think that goes in our favor too. But Oklahoma, that's the one you got to have circled on your calendar.
Yep, Matt, three regular season games left. Just your analysis of where the team stands right now and big picture, you know, I'm not going to make you do prediction radio, but like, do you think this team is playing well enough right now that they could win those last three regular season games?
You know, I think they're in a good spot. The offense is probably still not 100% right, but the defense played better. I think you're going to see Heacock, you know, kind of continue to add wrinkles and adjust so that, you know, what happened against West Virginia does not become routine. Texas Tech does not worry me. I don't think TCU at home worries me greatly either. Obviously, the game is the big one is that game against Oklahoma. And if you take care of business but lose that game, you finish 8-4, which is probably considered a disappointment. But I'm not crazy as an Iowa State fan. I will take that all day long compared to where this program has been for most of my lifetime. But I actually kind of like where they're getting Oklahoma. Much like where they got Spencer Rattler last year, Spencer Rattler was fairly inexperienced. I think at this point in the season, you can safely say that about Caleb Williams. Oklahoma has disappeared at times. They will go through stretches where they don't play well. Their offense is not elite. I think Iowa State will have probably already faced several defenses better than theirs in Iowa, Baylor, and probably West Virginia at this point. I mean, certainly Oklahoma State. So it's going to be a good game. It's a game that Iowa State can win. We've beaten Oklahoma several times in the Matt Campbell era. If you're a Cyclone fan, you've got to feel pretty good, but know that there are some things that can continue to be improved on the offensive side of the football.
Yeah, the professor, I mean, he was teaching like a 100-level class at West Virginia last weekend, and that was like the masters of whatever you're studying. I'm going to fail out half of the class, and, you know, like 40% is going to be enough to get you like a B when it gets curved. That was the defensive effort put forward against Texas. I wanted to ask you this just one bigger picture question about the Iowa State football program right now, because I was thinking about this earlier today. And is Iowa State at a place where you can kind of set it and forget it? They're going to win, like, anything less than 7 games is a real letdown at this point. Because I think Matt Campbell in year number 6, and I don't see any reason to believe that he's taken off anywhere, definitely this offseason, and he might as well. I mean, we've talked about it over and over and over again. I think he's looking like he's going to be here for the long run. You know, fingers crossed. We believe that's how it's going to work. How close is he to entering that sort of Bill Snyder, Kirk Ferentz-y territory? Because there's not a lot of coaches that get a lot of long tenure at one school in college football these days. But Bill Snyder, if you think about him at Kansas State, he basically hit this point where, hey, we're going to win at least 7 games every year, and when things align correctly, we're going to win 10 games and we're going to compete for a Big 12 championship. How close to you do you think we are with that for Matt Campbell? And or are we there already?
Austin, I think that story starts next year, probably. I mean, we've said it already this podcast. A lot of these guys have been here for years now, and it's going to be a lot of new faces next year. So if we can replicate that success with a lot of new personnel, and we can still get 7 or 8 wins next year, I think that says a lot about this program moving forward. And the other thing, and you kind of mentioned it too, I don't want people to think, oh, this is Matt Campbell's peak. You know, he's going to be getting you 7 or 8 wins each year. He's never going to be able to get over the hump. I think, you know, when everything aligns right, and I don't even think that was last year. Losing to Louisiana Lafayette is not everything aligns in the stars, and it's a team of destiny. I think Matt Campbell has the chops to win the Big 12 and maybe get us a spot in the playoff. I think that is his peak, is to get us in the college football playoff. And I don't want people to be like, oh, this is going to be Matt Campbell for his whole career. We're going to win 8 or 9 games. And I know we're going to see that popping up from various fan bases on the Twitter web. So I want to warn people, I don't think we have seen the peak of Matt Campbell at Iowa State yet.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I think right now the pattern is going to be 8 wins a year. That's what, you know, outside of Matt's first year, we've basically been at. So I think that's certainly going to be the norm for now. I don't think that's the necessarily the expectation, nor do I think that that is the peak either, Dylan. I just really don't believe in that. I think what's really going to show, again, what this program has is what happens next year and the year after. And it's something that I think needs to be said. These players have accomplished a ton. They've been here a lot. They're very experienced. It is possible for little, whether you want to call it addition by subtraction, whatever you do want to call it. Some of these players have been here 4 or 5 years. there are very talented guys on the roster. There are very, very talented young players that have just started to crack the field. You could very easily, we could very easily in 2 years from now, Keeney and Dylan be sitting here, you know, talking about how young and talented that team is and how that team is better than the team is this year. We obviously don't know that, but I do think there's a higher ceiling out there. And if Matt continues to recruit well, there's no reason to think that they won't get there.
Yeah, I'm certainly not looking at like saying Iowa State's peaked under Matt Campbell. I just, you know, this was Iowa State's sixth win of the season. So that's 5 straight years of bowl eligibility. You know, you just kind of feel like you're at this point where if you end up with less than 6, like something has gone terribly, terribly wrong.
I would agree. Yeah, I would agree. And that's one thing we also do need to mention. I had to write the recap for Wide Right 90 Light, which I did later in the evening than normal, as I had some celebrating to do. But not only did I not mention bowl eligibility, which I saw several people throw out in the comments, it never crossed my mind. It did not cross my mind until I listened to the Murph and Andy show today, and they talked about it. So that's a pretty incredible thing. Again, going back to me being crazy excited in 2011 to be able to go to a bowl game, now it's just no big deal.
That is exactly what I was going to say, Matt. How weird is it for Iowa State fans to, you know, get bowl eligibility and not really care about it? Like, it's not a headline. It's not, you know, that is not what I came away with after we won against Texas. That was really the last thing on my mind. I didn't even know that was our sixth win. I mean, I guess I did, but I did not take that into account until just now, which is a cool place to be for Iowa State fans, because that historically has not been what we're used to.
Yeah, I could get used to this being the new norm, too. And I was thinking about this on Saturday of just, if you could script out a perfect day as an Iowa State fan, Iowa State season ticket holder, it's a November home game that matters with the weather being absolutely perfect and a Jack Trice like under the lights for a Big 12 game that has championship game implications. So that's about as good as it's going to get. You know, we're not going to compete for the college football playoff every single year. If things go absolutely right, then hey, you never know. Any Power 5 program that can get through a season undefeated with one loss has a chance to do it. But hey, if this is going to be the norm, and if we're going to be playing important home games in November, I you know, sign me up for that every single season from now until, who knows, until Matt Campbell, I don't know what his kids' names are, when he eventually hands the reins over, and it'll be a much smoother transition than that school over to the East is going through right now. Do you have anything else on football before we move on to another topic and another season that is getting ready to start, and basically two programs just at the exact opposite ends of where we are and I guess where we would like to be?
I do want to shout out one player who played very well Saturday, and we haven't talked about him a whole lot on this podcast. Eni Irazawike had a great game Saturday. Just wanted to show him some proper love. Has been stellar this season. I think one of the biggest question marks coming into the season was who was going to be kind of that stud in the middle of the line. Last year it was Jaquan Bailey. Like, who's going to plug that? And I think we lost Jamal Johnson too last year, who played a lot. So Irazawike has stepped up, and he's been great all year, doing a great job representing that number 58. So just wanted to show him some proper love.
Yeah, I agree. Enye's been a beast, and I'm glad his counting stats are starting to back up how good a player that he is, because he's got a ton of sacks this year, too, that you never would expect until you actually look at the stat sheet.
Yeah, sorry. Audio issues on my end there. Irazawike, watching him in that game, I believe it was stuffing a couple run plays. He also had a sack. What blows me away about him is, you know, Ray Lima had a very good season 1 year, but Ray did not stuff the stat sheet, and he never really looked like an NFL player. Ray was just kind of a very crafty, savvy veteran. It's really, really, really impressive watching Eni dominate a couple linemen on every play, get the sacks, be disruptive. He forces hurries on the inside. He has all of the makings to me of like a three technique type player in the NFL, someone who's probably going to get drafted inside, I don't know, I would think somewhere in the first 4 rounds from what I've heard rumblings of, and I haven't seen a big board at this point in the season, but I think I've seen him as like a top five defensive tackle in this draft, and he's got the size to do it. He is humongous. And Chris Williams and Brent Bloom talked about on their podcast that it's probably true that he, you know, he might be the most underappreciated player, not just on the defense this year, but that we've had on the defense in a number of years. And I kind of agree with that, actually.
Yeah, he's way up there for sure. Guys, I this has been a lot of fun. I love talking about football with you guys. Regrettably, we have something else we need to talk about on this podcast, though. Are you ready to move on?
It's not the Chicago Bears, right?
It's not the Chicago Bears. Matt Nagy should be in jail, and that's all I really have to say about the Bears.
Matt Nagy should be in jail, and Ben Roethlisberger should retire. Both of those things are true.
Just put Mike Zimmer and Matt Nagy in a room together and see who comes out alive.
All right. Gosh. Talk about football misery for this podcast, Keeney, between what's going on right now and what happened to me on Sunday.
Yeah. Shout out to Stoss Bar and Grill right now. You guys are getting the very best stuff. Your sponsorship dollar is going very far. No, we do love Estas, and actually tomorrow would be a great day to go to Estas, either for a late lunch or for an early dinner, because it's the tip off of basketball season. And we talked about the Iowa State women last week. We're ready to talk about the men. We'll do a little bit of brief overview. We'll hopefully do a more in-depth season preview a little bit later. Dylan, I want to start with you because basketball is a little bit more of your domain here. And obviously a whole lot has changed about the program over the last 8 months, basically since the end of the last disastrous campaign. But what are your expectations coming into this season? And what do you think is reasonable for the fan base? Because what I personally feel like is this season is just like snuck up so fast, and I don't think expectations could be a whole lot lower, which is kind of surprising based on all the turnover that we've seen with the roster and the coach.
Yeah, the phrase I'm going to use for this upcoming season, at least for my outlook on it, is cautiously pessimistic. I'm expecting probably, you know, at most 5 conference wins. I wouldn't be surprised if it's something closer to 3. You know, you got to think we get at least one. It's hard to go down from 0-18 in the Big 12. But I will say this fan base will be quickly inspired if they start showing results. It will not take a whole lot to recapture Hilton Magic. If they play gritty, hard basketball, you know, that's winning basketball, and it's not just a hot mess like it has been at least the last year and a half, it's not going to take a whole lot to get us back in the seats and get us loud and make Hilton what it should be. So I'm going to say cautiously pessimistic. I have the lowest of expectations, but I will be very happy if they are exceeded. And that is what I ask for all Iowa State fans. It's a new coach. It is a bunch of new players, and the Big 12 is loaded this year. So it is a hard place for a rebuild year. There's nowhere to hide in the Big 12. So stick with this team. Stick it out. It might be ugly again, but at least there is a glimmer of hope now.
Yeah, Matt, what are your personal expectations here? I haven't talked to you about basketball in quite a while. With everything that's brand new, I mean, like, what are you, I guess, what are you hoping to see, and what do you think is actually going to happen?
Yes, I've actually got my expectations are a little different than maybe most. I think they will be better than projected. I obviously think they were at rock bottom last year, and the Big 12 is very, very good. I just think it is kind of forgotten that you have, you know, 3 or 4 Iowa State players with good experience who have played well at times. And, you know, you've seen that from Trey Jackson. You've seen that from George Condit. You've got 5 essentially Power 5 transfers coming in, some who have played at a, you know, well at on major stages. And then you've got an amazing recruit that you've brought in. And I think you know, there have been worse teams who have done more with less, who have done maybe more with less. So certainly an NCAA tournament should not be the expectation. I don't think that's going to happen at all. But the non-conference schedule is easy. I am looking for this team to win about the same number of Big 12 games as Fred Hoiberg did in his first year. Can you get to 4 or 5 wins with your non-conference slate? Maybe that gets you to 13, 14 wins overall. Maybe it's less than that. But I do think this team will not be as bad as everybody thinks. I think the style that they're going to play is going to make them very annoying to play against. And that's kind of my expectation. I'm actually very, very excited. I find myself, you know, very anxious and excited to get it started with so many new faces and players who will hopefully be around for a couple of years. And some of the recruits coming in, it's this year is all about building chemistry and establishing this program so that it's ready when some of these high level kids get here in the future.
Yeah. I just want to see us win a couple of home games and, you know, be competitive, you know. I don't feel like my expectations are nearly that high just because this is a complete and total rebuild. But there are some intriguing pieces on this roster. So I want to ask you guys, like, in the non-Tyrese Hunter category, who are you most looking forward to watching this year? Could be a transfer. Could be a player that's been at Iowa State for a little while. What do you guys think?
I'm going to go, and I think he'll probably be the leading scorer on this team. Isaiah Brockington. Transfer from Penn State, flirted with the NBA draft a little bit, came back and decided to go to Iowa State. I mean, just a stud. He can really kind of do it all. He is probably a scorer first, but he also, I mean, he's a big guy. It's not like a wing that just is on offense and then he kind of is on the worst player on defense. He's going to be able to get boards. He plays bigger than he is. And I'm really looking forward to seeing what he can do. I think he'll be a fan favorite by the end of the season.
Yeah, Brockton kind of gives me like Will Clyburn vibes. Like, I don't think he probably won't be a player of that caliber, especially right away. But just like this big wing who knows how to score the basketball, which Iowa State, I mean, they just so desperately needed. Just like anybody that could go create a basket. So he should be an interesting piece for sure. Matt, non-Tyrese Hunter category, who are you looking forward to seeing?
Yep, Tyrese Hunter. No, I'm
kidding. Yeah, honestly, that's kind of the answer. What do you got for me?
Caleb Grill and Jazz Koontz. I think Jazz, from what I understand, is not going to be a starter, but has been probably a little overlooked. If you look at his efficiency numbers from when he did play last year, he's very, very good. The advanced metrics absolutely love him. And then we're through the grapevine that Caleb Grill has looked better, that he's gotten bigger, and that he will be a different player than the kind of deer in the headlights baby Caleb Grill that we saw during his first stint in Ames. So those are the two guys.
How about so George Condit's a name that I think we've heard a lot about. This is his senior year, right? This is his fourth year in the program.
Yeah.
It seems like, you know, he's playing for the Puerto Rican national team, at least at some level over the summer. And I mean, the guy's been around for a long time. Do you think this is a year that we finally see him maybe emerge as like a consistent piece that can be a player for these guys?
He's the last of the Shy clones. It was kind of the recruiting class that, you know, we were championing. And almost rightfully so, of Steve Prohm, it included Tyrese Haliburton, Talen Horton-Tucker, who are both very good NBA players now. And then Condit was supposed to be, you know, kind of the best. He was looked at as a really good piece, and he's just never really put it all together. But like you said, Kenny, he had a great summer with the Puerto Rican national team. He's always been, I mean, he loves Ames. He loves Iowa State. You know, if he was able to put up points and put up rebounds, please God, rebound, please. If you can get 7 rebounds a game, George Condit, I am begging you. If Condit is able to be kind of the rim protector and rebounder that we've needed him to be his entire career, I will proudly be the new president of the George Condit fan club. And the other thing, we mentioned Caleb Grill. It sounds like Ott is really trying to harp on defense and toughness. And I watched a lot of freshman Caleb Grill, and toughness, maybe, defense, not so much. If we're going to be this defensive team, I'm really going to need to see something new out of Caleb Grill, because that guy couldn't guard a mannequin as a freshman. I hope that has changed. I'm not being overly critical, but that guy was so bad at defense. One of the worst, like, the college defenders I think I've ever seen. Caleb Grill, I'm sorry. I hope you got a whole lot better at defense.
Yeah, please God, somebody grab rebounds. Somebody grab an offensive rebound every once in a while, too.
Please.
That'd be pretty great.
I'm begging you.
Everybody on the team should be able to grab
one offensive rebound. I will be screaming at my TV. Please get a rebound.
All right, let's talk odds. New coach in town. The program is well overdue for a change. Otzelberger, he's been in Ames. He wasn't the hire maybe that, I don't want to say that everybody wanted, because I think we really expected him to be the guy, and I think we're all relatively happy with him. I guess I'm not 100% sure where this question is even going to go, but your thoughts about TJ Otzelberger taking over the program. And I'll say this, everything I've heard about Otzelberger has been, I think, exactly what Iowa State needs it to be. We need to be a culture first program, but more of like a culture first, second, and third and fourth program to get back to sort of those Hoiberg level highs. You know, we don't have to score a million points a game. We don't have to, you know, run like a Tony Bennett pack line defense. But if Iowa State can establish a culture under TJ Otzelberger, I think that's what he's really trying to do. And I think where Steve Prohm got a little bit sidetracked was he brought in talent. And he's like, I can make this work. I think where Otzelberger is coming from is, I'm going to find guys who work for me. I don't care how many stars are next to their name, and we'll just figure it out from there.
Yeah, a little five-star culture before five-star talent is the Otz approach. And this is something I kind of want to ask you guys. So Otz has been kind of, you know, he definitely in all of the interviews he's had, he's been talking about defense. He's been talking about toughness. And certainly for a team that maybe isn't as talented as the other teams that's going to be playing, especially in conference play, that is a very good way to sneak away with some wins, is to just, you know, tire out and frustrate the opponent. You don't have to be a five-star McDonald's All-American to play good defense. The question I do have, though, do you think that is part of the long-term ideology of the Otzelberger identity, or do you think we'll slowly start to see things as we get shooters, as we get playmakers, as we get more talent? Do you think it'll kind of divulge back into Hoiball territory, or do you think the shoot a bunch of threes and live and die by it, do you think those days are all long gone?
No, I think he wants culture guys. And I know the recruiting has actually looked really well. Some of the kids he signed that are going to play in a couple years when they get to campus. I'm not going to pretend like I know a ton about high school recruiting, but I think based on how he has handled this first offseason, really in charge of the program, it's going to be a culture fit, which is what it absolutely should be. And you know what? I'm going to trust his eye for talent, and I'm going to trust that he can find guys that he wants to work with.
Yeah, I would agree. And I think that it'll always be more defensively oriented. I, for one, am willing to trade some points for, I don't know, being able to get a stop every now and then.
Get a stop and like clean up a defensive rebound, because our tallest player on the court is, you know, 6'6".
Rebound?
Now, I love having a dog like a Dustin Hoge out there to rebound, but like he shouldn't be the biggest player you have on the court.
I want to get out in front of this. I am all for a defensive minded Iowa State. I would be, as anyone who knows my brand of basketball, I am all about hustle and grit and defense. I would love a full court press. If we could get a team with five Mark Vitals, I would love that team to death. So if that's what Otz wants to build, I will be here for it the entire time.
Yeah, it's funny that you root for the Brooklyn Nets when you're actually a big defensive first guy, though, for being honest.
It is a contrast of styles. It's funny, the Milwaukee Bucks, and I we can get back to basketball after this, but the Milwaukee Bucks are literally like my dream NBA team, and it is looking like they will be the constant thorn in my Brooklyn Nets side as long as this current roster of the Brooklyn Nets is alive. It's funny that my favorite style of basketball is going to be my team's biggest rival in the next couple of years.
Yeah, your biggest undoing there is exactly the thing you enjoy the most.
We'll see.
Maybe. Matt, do you have any games that you're really looking forward to on this non-conference slate?
Actually, this Oregon State game should be intriguing. I believe that's coming up on Friday. Oregon State was in the Elite Eight last year and kind of made a surprise run. So that should be interesting. Otherwise, I mean, not really. Xavier's in there, sure, Creighton. But Iowa State's got a really pretty forgiving non-conference slate, which is probably a good thing for them being where they're at right now. I am looking forward to the game against Missouri in the Big 12 SEC Challenge. Always fun to play former Big 12 school. Hopefully we get to kick the crap out of the Tigers.
That's the one. That's, I think, a very winnable home game in like late January, where if this season plays out the way I'm hoping it does, you know, Iowa State is competitive in Big 12 play, but they're not winning a lot of games. And then they get this weird late January non-conference home game against a Power 5 opponent, and they beat Missouri. That's the one I'm looking for. Oregon State was the other one I had in mind, too, because they lost a lot of talent, as far as I understand it, off of that Elite Eight team. But they're still, you know, a program that made the Elite Eight last year. They're a program with momentum. And I'm certainly not expecting Iowa State to come out and, like, win that game. But I would love it if they did. And that might be a good early barometer for where the talent on the roster, you know, how is it going to fit in place? Because, you know, we talked about Brockington. Brandon Johnson played at Minnesota, and he was like a rotation piece at Minnesota. Jazz was a player at Washington State. Like, these dudes have played games for big programs. So you would hope that they could find a way to fit in at Iowa State, too.
Also, the game I selfishly want to see is whenever Texas comes to town, mostly because that looks like the boss level Fred Hoiberg recruiting strategy of, like, let's just get a team of the best transfers and go from there. Chris Beard has seriously gotten like the top, and it was a crazy transfer season. I think everyone entered the transfer portal. I don't think anyone stuck around, and Chris Beard got all of them. So that is a team I want to see, because it kind of feels like Hoiberg continued. And I know he's back coaching college basketball, but not quite to the same success that he had. So it's kind of the new look, I would say, transfer U is Texas. And I want to see how that experiment goes. It's guys that have never played with each other, but there was a whole lot of talent, and it's intriguing. And I want to see that team in person.
That's an NBA free agency team, you know, playing.
It truly is. Yeah.
Yeah. Big 12 is going to be loaded. Yeah. I want to keep expectations modest for the team, but it's a complete reset. I don't think we can express enough how different this roster is going to look than the one that played the last game of the season last year. You know,
if we were very bad last year,
we were so bad,
very bad.
We've got some proven talent, I would say, like guys that you know can play. Who knows? They will need a couple guys to step up and be like real players, but this should look like a power conference basketball team this year.
Also, like I said, I mean, we just have hope now. Anytime we win, it is going to be, it's going to be fulfilling, even if, and we didn't do a whole lot of it last year, but winning last year didn't even bring me joy, because I just knew that the team was not where an Iowa State basketball team should be. But this is a whole new era, and it's just going to be a whole lot more fun to watch this team this year, I think.
No, low expectation seasons are usually the best.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I mean,
very under the
hopefully
radar.
This is the last one.
Yeah, it's true. Hopefully.
Anything else on basketball? Like I said, it's the start of the season. We'll have plenty more chances to talk about it. Just wanted to hit a little bit of that before the season opener. I guess really at this point, this is about the end of the podcast. Do you have anything else that you guys wanted to talk about before we get out of here?
Just excited fans can be back in Hilton. It's been basketball in Hilton without fans is not fun, and I'm hoping we have some good crowd this year.
It's a good point. Hadn't thought about that one, too. Very good point.
I hope also, everyone has fun and no one gets hurt.
Also, taunting in the NFL is garbage.
Keenan, I just wanted a live update there. Cassius March, what a guy.
I hate taunting. I hate taunting penalties.
The roundhouse kick and then staring down the entire sideline of Pittsburgh and the city itself. Bold. Bold.
Just stared down the punter after getting a sack on third and long. Taunting penalty, Steelers first down.
Not in my league, Keenan. Not in my league. I hate taunting.
This is so dumb. All right. Matt, anything else before we get out of here?
No, I'm all good. I will hopefully be at the game tomorrow, and I am excited to get back out. Maybe I'll cop a clone cone before it gets too cold.
And you know what? Actually, those clone cones, maybe it hits a little bit better when it is cold, believe it or not. All right. Also, get to the women's game if you can. I know it starts early in the day, which is kind of weird, but yeah, should be fun.
I'm planning on trying to get there.
Yeah, two basketball games at Hilton. I'm excited. Gentlemen, it was great to talk to you guys. Good podcast. A lot going on in Iowa State world. A lot more still to come in the next few weeks, and I'm excited to see where this football season ends. Excited to talk to you guys about it as well. Yeah, let's get on out of here. Thanks to Stoss Bar and Grill, and we'll talk to you guys next week.